McLean Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast sunny morning with Plain Gardening. I got all these seeds I'm ready to plant. I'm trying to get my mind off of them. I just want to go plant seeds. There's stuff to do. We'll talk about the kind of stuff I'm planting. Talk about the kind of stuff you're planting. But listen, here's the thing. There's always a thing, isn't it? And the thing is this, I keep thinking about these freezing temperatures, and I keep thinking about frost, and I keep thinking about cold damage, and I keep thinking about the fact that last week Tony said to me, "Boy, we really got hit hard." And Tony said it to me, he was down on Fowl River. Tony kind of said, like, "You didn't prepare me for this." And maybe I didn't. I've been thinking about it. I've been thinking about cold. And you know, I told Tony, and Tony, you call me back and you fuss at me if I ain't right. I think it's going to be okay. I think his plants are going to come through okay. But that first cold spell can really do, it's funny how it does a little bit more damage. I tried to explain that. But here's the funny thing about freezing. And we don't have terms for where we are. We don't have terms for what happens to us. It's insane. I mean, it's insane. We don't even have names for oaks. We don't have names for hickories. We don't have a clue how to talk about where we are. We don't even have names for seasons. How do you even explain things when you don't even have a name for our seasons? If you think that we got four seasons, you ain't been living here long enough. Or you hadn't been paying attention. You wouldn't have to live here more than a year. But here's the thing with freezing. We don't have the language for freezing. We don't have a language for what happens when things get cold. And it's very, very important to understand what happens, because freezing in Mobile means something very different than freezing does in other places. And they don't, in a way, I could argue they don't even need a very well-developed language for freezes, because in Michigan, the freezes are so intense and they're so deep and they're so persistent that it happens and that's it and you're done and everything is frozen. But it doesn't happen that way here. And one of the big differences is, in understanding where we are, is that almost every freeze we have, you try to think of the ones that didn't happen this way, and they're hard to remember because they often, it was years ago when they happened. Almost every freeze we have is a nighttime freeze that is followed by a daytime warm-up. And we don't get these magnificent, prolonged freezes that they get in a lot of places, you know, even in Kentucky and in Pennsylvania and certainly in Michigan. And that's when they freeze, they stay frozen for days. And this is really important. Let me tell you why, so you can understand what's happening with freezes. We need another language for freeze. You know what happens when it freezes? Have you ever thought about why do freezes damage plants? Well, listen, here's a great way to think about it. You with me? Listen to me just a minute. When the temperature drops from, say, 45 to 44 degrees, nothing happens. I mean, you don't even notice it. You barely notice it. It's not a real, nothing really that important happens. I mean, it's cold and it gets a little colder, but nothing happens. Nothing happens. It's not a significant drop. But when it drops, listen to me, when it drops from 33 to 32 degrees, phew, boom, something happens. It's a big thing. And what happens is, well, you know, water freezes. And this is pretty important, because freeze damage is really about the plant losing access to water and some other things. Crazy things happen that you don't think about. there is, as we're getting close to 32 degrees, bacteria play a huge role. Pseudomonas bacteria. Pseudomonas bacteria are the bacteria that, don't they cause, cause serious diseases, I mean, in people. But there's a bunch of different kinds of Pseudomonas bacteria out there. And one type of Pseudomonas bacteria live on your plants. And you may not like me saying words like Pseudomonas very often, but you ought to hear about them because those Pseudomonas bacteria are playing a huge role in how your plant survives. Even at relatively mild temperatures, Pseudomonas bacteria are figuring out ways, let's say around 33, 34, 35 degrees, to intensify the damage. So they actually cause ice formation. They actually cause water to freeze at higher air temperatures. Isn't that weird? And the advantage for them doing that is that you get all these little ice crystals, and it just punctures cells in the plant. Most plants would actually be pretty tolerant to temperatures down much lower than they are, except for these Pseudomonas bacteria. Crazy stuff happens. Let's don't try to go into that too far right now. But here's the funny thing. Ice, water turns to ice, and that's what hurts the plant because the plant can't move water around. And water is very important to plants. It's important to people, too. We have a little bit of a buffer, but, you know, in a way, what happens to us is we freeze because we don't actually ice up. Plants ice up. And so that's fine. The above ground portion of a plant can ice up, and we lose things like tomatoes above ground and peppers above ground. And sometimes we get damaged. But you know what? A lot of plants survive because the water underneath the soil does not freeze, because it takes a lot more cold and a lot more length of chilling to freeze the water underneath the ground. Whew. And that's why a freeze in Alabama is always going to be different than a freeze in the middle of winter in Michigan, because our freezes are over before the cold can freeze the water in the ground. You know, it's funny, in Michigan, people actually wrap their shrubs above ground, not to keep them warm, but to keep them from getting desiccated, to keep them from drying out, because they don't have any water left to draw on, because all the water in the ground is frozen up. And winds can desiccate them further, and that's what can cause the damage. Let's think about what happened to your plants, and let's figure out how to prepare ourselves for how to do this, and how to prepare ourselves for freezes, so that we're not too surprised. I got a little bit of damage from these early freezes. You know, it's got a little colder than some of us maybe anticipated, but not too much colder. It happens on those first freezes. Your plants are now preparing. The plants that have survived and the plants we talk about growing during winter, they're now prepared for the next freeze. You're going to see much less damage in the future. But we'll also be able to talk about, gosh, when do I need to protect these plants? When do I really need to protect these plants? Because we can grow these things all winter long. Man, it's that time of year when I got so many things to enjoy, I don't know whether I can eat them all. It's the truth. I got broccoli coming in like crazy. I got parsley coming in like crazy. My cabbages are about to head up. Johnny, my cabbages are even headed up. My kale's coming on. Collards are incredible. The turnips and the mustards. I can't tell you about how good the turnip roots are right now. They're all coming in. There's all these beautiful things happening. I even got nasturtiums left over just because I threw some straw on top of them. It's this wonderful time of year. We just got to understand how to adjust to the cool weather, to the cold weather. We got to understand what a freeze means and how to fix it, how to adjust for it without panicking about it and saying, oh man, it's frozen, we can't do anything else. Well, no, you ain't in Michigan. You're in Alabama. You're in Mississippi. You may be in Florida. And we can do a lot of things here during this winter weather if we just kind of understand what's going on with the weather. Hey, folks, give us a call, 251-343-0106, 251-343-0106. It's kind of nice to be able to talk about plants rather than, well, you know what. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
All right. Let's get back. We've got some questions this morning. I'm going to talk a little bit more about cold. And you know, here's Josh is right on target here. Looking at, you know, his cabbages got a little bit of damage. The American, classic American cabbages and a purple cabbage, and they're looking pretty nice. I think they're going to head up. I think they're going to do fine. But you know, the outside of the leaves, they got a little bit of, damage on the outside of the leaves, but those outside leaves, you know, they're always kind of the sacrificial leaves. They don't really contribute to the inside of the head. If you're making kimchi or sauerkrauts, those outside leaves can be good. You just trim off the bad parts and it's fine. But that's okay. Those outside leaves, they're helping in photosynthesis. They're playing a really neat role. You need those outside leaves. They're always going to look a little funky. They're never going to be the core. And they get a little damaged. So what? Big deal. Not a big deal. And so the cabbage is looking good, but there is another cabbage that he sent me a picture of, the Napa cabbage. And it looks kind of beat up. Now, I'm going to tell you about the Napa cabbage. I don't think it's the cold so much, Josh. I do think that the cold, I think they're finicky. I think Napa cabbages are not as cold tolerant, not as hardy. They're also not as heat tolerant. They're also not as humidity tolerant. They are finicky. Finicky. But here's the big thing with those Napa cabbages, and one of the reasons I don't grow them as much as I used to, and I've tried them in several places. They are highly susceptible to bug damage, and a lot of what you're seeing there is pretty bad, ugly-looking bug damage. And the bug damage is probably mostly from something called a yellow-margined beetle. The yellow-margined beetle. It sometimes helps to have a name for these things because it helps us to identify what's causing the problem and how we're going to fix it. And yellow margin beetle is not that easy to fix, but it loves cool weather. It's loves cool weather. It can be a problem. You do have to, if you're going to get yellow margin beetles, you're going to need to spray for them. And I recommend Spinosad. It works very well and is not toxic to you. It is toxic to the beetles because it's basically a... Is it a disease? We'll call it a disease. It's essentially a disease. I think a fungal disease that affects only beetles, mostly, and a few other things. Very effective. And I think if you're going to grow those, you're going to have to use the Spinosad pretty frequently. The problem is the frilly leaves, the things hide in them. I have a hard time with Napa cabbages, but that's not a cold issue. Not so much a cold issue, just something I wouldn't recommend. But your other cabbages look great. Listen, let me tell you something else, Josh. Instead of Napa cabbages, I personally like bok choy a lot better. And bok choys are much easier to use. They're more versatile. I think they taste better. Napa cabbages just kind of have a texture, but they don't have as much taste. Bok choys are better, and they don't seem to suffer as badly from some of these other diseases. Now, don't get the miniature bok choys. Get a full-size bok choy, and it'll be good. David is going to call in around 9:45. Thanks, David. David Hubble, we're going to talk a little bit about what he's seeing and some of the things he's seen this year and how he's dealing with his plants. So that's going to be really good. Somebody's asking me, will Persian lime survive the winter in the Styx River area? No. Absolutely not. Zero. No. don't do limes in the ground. We say this a lot here. Don't do them in the ground. They do real well in pots, and you're going to get everything you're going to get everything you can get out of a lime by growing it in a pot. I do recommend Persian limes are fine in pots, and I've had one in a pot for a long time. They did very well. I wish I had it again. I let it die. It's, you know how that is. I'm bad. When it comes to plants, sometimes I've killed more plants than any of you, I can assure you. But, you know, I still do it. That's the secret to gardening. You keep on even though you're bad at it. But Persian limes, it don't matter whether you're good or bad. They ain't going to grow in the ground here. Mexican limes, key limes, I like a little better for growing in pots. I think they're a better lime in general, and they grow really well in pots. But no, do not grow limes in the ground. They don't do well. Standard lemons don't do well either. We've talked a little bit about that. And just for good effect, Alicia sends me a picture of what a Persian lime looks like after a very mild cold spell. They just are not meant for this climate. It's just that simple. They're going to get burned up. Put them in a pot. Keep them in a pot. Alicia, you've been very patient with me because I haven't responded as quickly as I should have to your questions about what to do with your chicken manure. And, you know, it's a great little thing. You know, you can scatter it around plants. Don't put it on too heavy. I would take that. It's probably one thing you can do is mix it with something because that's pretty concentrated. You could mix it with some sawdust or with leaves. I think leaves are just fine. Mix it with some leaves and then put it around your plants. If you put it on the surface with those leaves, everything is going to be fine. There's going to be no problems. You're going to get all the nitrogen. The leaves will help to tie up the nitrogen so that it doesn't leach away. Everything is going to be fine there. But I'd mix it with some leaves. And you don't have to be as careful about it when you mix it with leaves because it's going to be released to the plant more slowly. And with that chicken manure, you don't have to apply a whole bunch of it either. So I'd say, how do you measure something like that? I'd say a bucket. How big's a bucket? I don't know. Let's say a gallon bucket of chicken manure mixed with a big bag of leaves would probably be about right. For fertilizing a plant. That'd be about right. So make sure it's a big bag of leaves, and that'll help you to buffer anything that goes wrong. Is that okay, Alicia? Did that work? Good. Hope it did. Let's see. Another question from Pam. Pam has sent me two beautiful pictures of camellias. Pam, if Bobby Green were looking, he could probably help us. I think the upper camellia is a beautiful camellia. I think the upper camellia looks to me a little bit like K-Sawada, K-Sawada. Mr. Sawada, it's good to be able to speak his name and remember his name. The Sawadas have been very important around Mobile in terms of, they brought a lot to Mobile in terms of plant material, in terms of understanding how to garden. Two great Japanese nurserymen, Mr. Kiyono and Mr. Sawada. The Sawadas have been really important to Mobile's history. And the upper one, I'm pretty sure, is named for Mr. Sawada, K. Sawada. It looks like it. The bottom one is absolutely beautiful. It reminds me, what a beautiful picture. I wish all of you could see these pictures. It reminds me of why it's so nice to live in a place where you can grow camellias. That camellia is absolutely stunning. It is a beautiful white background with red overlay, deep red, not rich red, and the red is in stripes, and little stipules and stripes along the petal, and with a center. And this is what I really love about camellias, is showing that old center, the stamens in the center, that golden boss in the center, the big golden, what is it, tower of stamens in the center. Absolutely beautiful, surrounded by this red. One, just a beautiful thing. And if I were really good, if I were really smart, I'd tell you what it is, and I can't. All I can tell you is it's absolutely beautiful. And I was looking for my camellia books, and I can't find them right now to look them up while we're talking. I'm thinking about it. It looks familiar, but on the other hand, it doesn't look familiar. So I may send this to my good friend Bobby Green and get him to help us out. I think the top one is Kesawada. I'm so proud of myself for getting that far. I'm a little uncertain what that bottom one is, so I'm going to check on it. And Pam, we're going to try to figure it out. She said she found these on two plants in her yard that have been there for quite a while. Let's see here. What do we got? We got music coming on. David Hubble is going to call in around 9:45, and we're going to talk a lot about what happens in his garden. And we always learn from David, so be prepared.
There is no...
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at
343-0106. You know, it is a funny thing. So if you're from where Tiny Tim is from, you talk about tulips. If you're from down south, you ought to talk about things like camellias because... gosh, they're so much prettier. They're so much nicer. They're so much more beautiful than tulips. I gotta say that. And I think tulips are really fine. I mean, there's some great looking tulips out there. But man, isn't it nice to be from a place where you can grow? Yeah. You can grow camellias, and they are absolutely stunning. Some beautiful camellias out there. And some great pictures. I wish I knew all of them. You know, there's a great camellia history in Mobile, and we haven't talked about camellias in a while. Nice to be reminded that we should talk about camellias here on this show. And we'll have to get Bobby Green on to talk a little bit more about them again. But one of the nice things is Mobile was... more than being an azalea city, it was a camellia city for a long time. That's gone, along with the azaleas. We are just what do we call ourselves now? The port city. Boy, that distinguishes Mobile, doesn't it? We are not even one of the major ports, but you know, we're the port city. But we don't have that history of camellias that we should. I mean, we aren't cherishing it, we aren't holding on to it. But for a while, anybody who was anybody in the gardening world in Mobile, anybody who was a gardener, really prided themselves on their camellias. And there was a lot of breeding that went on. There were a lot of varieties out there that, you know, we've probably lost the names for. And you often run into varieties you can't really name. But, Pam, those were both really beautiful. Again, I think the top one's Kesawada. I cannot find one that, in my mind, that fits the picture that you sent me. Now, it's probably because I'm not that smart. I mean, I like camellias, and I know a bit about them. But somebody like Bobby Green or Forrest Latta could help us a lot more. But we'll try to work on that, and I'll try to ship those images off and see whether we can get a little bit more information about those, because, boy, were they beautiful. Really, really beautiful. Beautiful-looking things. Some great things. Who is sending me this? It's got a great message. From... who keeps sending me great pictures of Satsuma juice, but a great picture of Hamlin oranges, and a reminder of how good Hamlin sweet orange juice is. And this is one of the things David and I are going to talk about. And David sometimes wants to stalk me a little bit. David, admit it, you do. Because I'll say things like, I think Louisiana sweet and Hamlin's taste better in our climate than some of the more common ones, like navel, that were developed for other areas. Now, navels can actually do quite well, and David has demonstrated this in parts of Louisiana and in some years here along the Gulf Coast. But nothing to me, and David and I are going to talk a little bit about this. We're going to talk a little bit about it here coming up in our next segment. David Hubble, who really loves Gulf Coast growing and has become an expert in the history of Gulf Coast growing, particularly around Louisiana. I think Hamlin oranges, when they are ripe in December, on or about December 6th to December 25th, are about the sweetest things in the whole world. They are incredibly good, incredibly delicious. You would have a very hard time. Navels just don't have that quality. They don't have that. And it's a rich sweetness that is very pleasant. It's not too tomatoey. It's rich and it, very delicious. I love those Hamlin oranges. Louisiana sweets are going to be about the same way. So there it is, a really cool thing for us to do. So somebody sent me a picture of a Satsuma that they have for the last 5 years. And it's got variegation on it. I don't know that that's a disease. I'm going to think about it. I'm wondering if that was an ornamental variety. This is the first year you've seen that kind of variegation that looks like a natural variegation. And for a while, I remember that somebody, Rick sent this picture in. And he's got a picture of a variegated citrus, which may be a Satsuma. For a while, I remember somebody was selling variegated Satsumas that had a natural variegation in the leaf. And that sometimes tends to come in and out and flash on and off. And that may be what we have there, but I'm going to think about it because it sure looks like a genetic thing and not a disease. So I think we have a sport that is showing that. Tell me, Rick, so here's, you want to figure out what's going on with your plant. I want to figure out the mechanics involved. But you want to know what to do. Tell me where you got that plant. If you can give me a little more information about it, maybe we can make some more decisions about what's going on there. I can't quite. Let's hear about where you got it, what it looked like when you got it, whether there was a special name or a tag on it before we decide to cut it down. At 5 years, it should be producing fruit, unless it's an ornamental variety, which it may be, or unless it's not getting enough sun. But I think it's just an ornamental variety that's probably not going to produce fruit as well. One of the interesting things, when you get an ornamental, let's say you get a Satsuma or something else that has variegated leaves. You know what I mean by variegated? It means that the leaves are going to be more than one color. There's going to be light green and dark green all mixed together in a leaf, and they make weird-looking patterns, and they can be really pretty, really interesting, really ornamental. In general, those plants are probably going to be lacking in chlorophyll. And chlorophyll, you may remember, you should always remember, is how plants feed themselves. They don't feed themselves with nitrogen. They don't feed themselves with fertilizer. They feed themselves by doing photosynthesis. And photosynthesis is why plants are green, or appear to us to be green, because they have chlorophyll in them. when you have a variegated plant, they have less chlorophyll in parts of the leaf. So there's less leaf surface doing photosynthesis. That means the plant doesn't feed itself as well and may have a harder time producing fruit. And there may be some other genetic things that are associated with that weird variegation that also tend to cause a decline in fruit. So here's what I'm going to do. Rick, I'm going to look up, because I remember in my mind that somebody was selling a variegated Satsuma. It was out there. I'm going to try to piece that together. You tell me a little bit more about where you got that plant, if you can remember, and that'll help me to determine whether, in fact, you do have a plant that was sold as a variegated plant. And we'll talk a little bit more about that variegation. It would show up more as the plant grew more vigorously, so I'm not surprised that you're seeing more of it now than you might have earlier on. But that is my best guess with what's going on. Have we talked enough about freezing? Listen, let me. We started out the show by talking a little bit about freezing temperatures and how weird they are and what causes them. And it's a funky thing that if you're getting on those first few freezes, I've done this, and it kind of works. It's kind of annoying, and it's kind of hard to do. But if you, part of running water over a plant maybe to dislodge or disrupt, I think it probably dislodges or disrupts at least some of the bacteria that are associated with the leaf. And if you run enough water over a plant while the temperature is dropping to around 32 degrees, I think it has several effects. One, it alters the temperature. The temperature doesn't drop as easily. It may also alter how those bacteria operate. And that's a funny thing to think about, but it's really weird. Bacteria cause frost damage. Mm. And when you and you think, God, these guys are ingenious. they want to figure out how to get inside those cell walls, and the way they do it is to form ice crystals, which act like little daggers and pierce the cell walls of a plant, and then they can chew on it and eat on it and, you know, make a living thereby. And rather than waiting on the cold to normally to break those cell walls at lower temperatures, which they would do because water freezes at a certain point, but let's say that would normally happen at 20 degrees. The Pseudomonas bacteria can make it happen at 32 degrees or even higher, by forming ice crystals, by helping the plant to form ice crystals, which destroys, or by helping the temperature form ice crystals, which destroys the cell walls at much higher temperatures, and these guys thrive. That's one of the interesting ways. But the other thing to think about is just that plants are going to survive here really well if we can cover them. And covering has a huge impact. Pine straw sometimes does it. If your plant's low enough and small enough, throwing a heap of pine straw on it can work. It's amazing. I threw some pine straw over my nasturtiums. Boom. They're fine. They come back just fine. They're going to keep growing. Now, we're probably going to get a cold spell that'll knock them out at some point, but it's amazing just throwing straw over things. Throwing a sheet or a blanket really can help. The one thing I have learned, I'll tell you, is that on the first frost, I think always on the first frost now, particularly if it's going to be a deep frost, it probably helps to go ahead and throw a sheet over just on that first frost. And then the next time it gets down to 28 degrees, don't pay attention. If you got hardy plants, they need that 28 degrees, and they'll be well adjusted to it. They just need help to get over that first frost because they haven't really adjusted to it yet. So covers help, keeps us going. A lot of you will find that in our climate, even without a cover, most plants are going to do just fine. They might get a little bit of damage here and there, but they're going to do just fine. Call us if you have any questions about how to deal with that and what plants are what and what you should do. And gosh, can I do that with carrots? Can I do it with beets? Can I do it with collards? What do I do? Do I do it with mustard and turnips? These are all really great questions. So give us a call, 251-343-0106. David Hubble's going to be back, and we're going to talk. We're going to compare notes on citrus and other things.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Hey, welcome back. It is a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. David Hubble stays in touch with us a good bit here on our show. David is has become an expert on growing many things that are traditional here along the Gulf Coast, and we hear from him a lot. If you hear the Gugutsa song on our segues with our opening and closing music segments, we owe that to David, who reminded us that Gugutsa is a big part of Louisiana cuisine. Melitol, which you heard about in the previous hour with Mike and Stu, David has been a big proponent of redeveloping the melitol culture here along the Gulf Coast, a great vegetable for us. But we also talk and sometimes politely argue about citrus. David, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. You, David, remind me, because you remember citrus being grown in Louisiana. And was it your grandfather, I remember, that you were telling me about that grew citrus?
It was a great uncle of mine. My grandmother's brother lived down in Port Sulphur. He moved there after World War II, and he opened up a supermarket or grocery store back then. But he also had a citrus orchard. And as a kid, I remembered we'd go fishing down there, and I was always amazed and mesmerized by the orchard that he had of. He had navel oranges, I know for a fact. He had grapefruit and satsumas, and I'm sure he had kumquats and other varieties of oranges as well. But that was just for me growing up in the suburbs. Seeing that and walking out in somebody's yard and seeing a big grapefruit tree was just something that was just really impressed me as a kid.
Yeah, it is interesting. And his climate down there is a little warmer than ours in Mobile, do you think?
Right. I think if you look at the zones back then, I think they're just what are we, 8 or 9? And they're one lower than us, I think. More tropical.
Yeah, they're a little, I think probably, here's what I would say. We're on the border of 8B, 9A, and they are on the border, they're more like 9A, 9B. So almost, and that make, can make a big difference. So 9B is a lot of the grapefruit growing areas in Florida are 9B. A lot of the grapefruit growing areas in Texas are basically 9B. Not quite 10, which is where Miami would be. And a little bit more cool temperatures in winter, but freezes would be very rare in those areas. More like his climate would be more like, I should say, Dauphin Island than it would be like Mobile. Dauphin
Probably.
Island is.
But yeah he was. Yeah. I can remember one or two occasions where the freezes hit bad and they had to restart everything. But I think that I think those were like. You had big fish kills all along the Gulf Coast because everywhere it was just such a deep, hard freeze in the early 80s.
That's right. So you're that old, and I'm that old, and we can remember those freezes. And they were pretty big. Some of the worst temperatures we've seen. It was certainly the 80s. I think were probably the worst temperatures we saw. In the 20th century, we did see some temperatures a little worse in the 19th century, but it's been a long time since we've seen cold like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think that, but that's really good. So, David, can I ask you whether you are growing both Louisiana sweet and navel oranges?
Right now, all I've got are three navel orange trees, a Myers lemon, and a Satsuma. I can't remember which one it was, the Satsuma, but I had tried the Louisiana sweets years ago when I first started. I can't remember if I transitioned them into the ground and they died, but I did get a few oranges off of that one. And I think, if I remember, they seem to, the fruit's a little smaller than the navel, right?
I think they probably can be. I you know, there's usually not. They're actually rounder. It's funny. I don't know how to say it, but they're certainly more round. They have a different shape. It seems to me that navels always seem to me to be a little slightly elongated. You know, I think they probably a good Hamlin or Louisiana sweet would have about the same volume of fruit, of juice, of pulp as a navel. They're just shaped a little bit differently. And I do think that Hamlin's may tend to the word would be overproduce, that they may set fruit so well, which for a home gardener isn't necessarily a bad thing, that the fruits aren't as big. But they're about the same size. You know, I recommend, because this is, you know, this is your thing too. I mean, I recommend trying Louisiana sweet, which I think is basically the same as a Hamlin. I wish somebody could grow Hamlin and Louisiana sweet out next to each other, and we could kind of get a feel for how they do, and then we could compare them to navels. And some years the navels would be better, and some years I think maybe, but most years I think the Hamlins would be better. Mm-hmm. That's my bet.
Well, if I had more room, I'd be happy to try that experiment.
Yeah, I know exactly. It's that's the dilemma, isn't it? You want to try everything, and you mentioned a couple of weeks ago that you wanted to try the Mayhaws, and I thought, yow,
<All right. laughs>
where you gotta put them? They take room. They take room. They're not shrubs. They're going to be not maybe not as big as some citrus, but they're still going to take considerable room, and you'll want two or three of them. And we got cedar apple rust to deal with, and you're not in a position where you can control that easily. So I'm going to say, try something else. David, how are your we don't have a lot of time in this hour. We're going to come back in the next hour, but how is your Melitón doing right now? Have you kind of locked it up?
Yes, I decided 2 weeks ago when we had that freeze come in, and I don't think we really got down to much past 34 at my house, but I produced best that I have in 5 years, and I just figured it was time to kind of give it a rest and protect it for next year.
Yep. So you cut it down, and it's it, – yep. Did you cut it all the way back?
I cut it down to about 2 inches away from the ground, so pretty much all the way back.
Yeah. And then do you cover it? Do you cover it with something? Do you cover it with mulch or anything?
Yeah, so I try to cover it up with leaves or hay or straw, whatever is accessible. Since I got a lot of oak leaves, I tend to use that, especially if it's been mulched down a bit. And then I'll cover it with a cloth on top of that too.
Yep. But it has been a great year for Melitón, and you've had lots of great things going on this year with Melitón, including the white Melitón adventure.
Right.
Have you heard back from your growers on how those are doing?
Yes, we've had some pretty favorable reports, which I can go into more detail in the next hour if you'd like.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Let's do that. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. We're going to talk a little bit about citrus and how things are. So one last question. I got 20 seconds. Tell me, have you tried your navels yet? Have you picked any?
I tried one, and I didn't think it was sweet enough yet. I thought it still needed a couple more weeks. We hadn't had a lot of chill time yet. And so I'm going to try another one either today or wait till next week.
Yeah, I'm interested. I'm interested to hear when you think it's at its peak. So keep trying. Hey, we're going to be back. David, thank you for joining us. We're going to be back in the next hour to talk a little bit more about some of David's great projects. and to answer some of your questions. Put it up, baby.